This is CICK News. When you think of fishing, what do you picture? Maybe a grandfather and grandson out on a little rowboat at the crack of dawn, two lines waiting silently in the placid water for a gentle tug, and then the sound of a rod reeling in a sunfish or lake trout? Well, that's not the kind of fishing I'm here to tell you about today.
And fisherwomen, there's not many, and I don't see them often, but when I do, it's just awesome. I'm like, fuck yeah, you get that fish, girl. It's great.
My name is Pamela Hassan, and the aim of this project is to discuss the significance of one woman who is upholding the Wet'suwet'en tradition to fish on her territory, while at the same time challenging norms of traditional gender roles when it comes to sustaining culture and family and fishing practices as cultural memory embedded in place through a feminist lens. Abigail Joseph enacts a living ritual that draws from ancestral knowledge and what Corum calls gendered resilience, a strength passed through practice, not just words. Abigail's dip netting is not only a method of fishing, it's a feminist intervention in collective memory, reshaping whose stories are remembered and how. So this project asks, how do bodies become vessels of cultural memory? And how does that memory empower? This project engages theories of cultural memory and embodiment, drawing from Maurice Halbwachs' idea that memory is socially framed, Clifford Geertz's view of culture as a web of significance, Corum's work on ritual and resilience, and Marianne Hirsch and Valerie Smith's ideas on post-memory and gendered transmission. I also incorporate Stedman, Bannister, and Medway's insights on how memory lives in bodies and movements, not just minds. The core question guiding my inquiry is, how is memory enacted through embodied ritual, and how does this challenge gendered assumptions about who sustains culture? Abigail is young, athletic, and unwavering in her commitment to the Wet'suwet'en rite to fish the Wet'suwet'en. Her physical strength, maternal presence, and cultural fluency position her at the intersection of past and future, a bridge between ancestral tradition and contemporary Indigenous womanhood. Her fishing is not just survival. It's political, maternal, and ceremonial. There's a place in northern British Columbia where the water glows blue-green as it roars between massive canyon walls. The village is called Wet'suwet'en and is located on the traditional territory of the Wet'suwet'en, a name which means people of the Wet'suwet'en River, showing just how vital this river is to the people of the territory, which spans approximately 22,000 square kilometers of British Columbia's central interior. This place with the blue-green water is called Wet'suwet'en. To settlers, it is known as the Bulkley River, but the name Wet'suwet'en means more than water. It means life flowing through generations, carrying memory like sediment in its current. For thousands of years, this canyon has been alive with motion, salmon twisting against the rapids, fishers building weirs and using gill nets, and more recently, their dip nets plunging into eddies, their hands pulling taut against the weight of the catch, and people meeting at the river to exchange fish for other foods and medicines. It's more than a river. It's a site of cultural inscription, what Pierre Nora would call a lieu de mémoire, where the past is not simply recalled, but reactivated. Each splash of a salmon, each push of the net, is a gesture of remembering that binds history to the now. I come here not as a fisher, but as a witness. And witnessing, as historian James Young reminds us, is never passive. It's the combined study of both what happened and how it was passed down to us. To listen to this place is to become a co-witness to histories both remembered and silenced. The voice you're about to hear is Abigail Joseph, the subject of my study of embodied tradition and ritual for this Special Topics in Communications project. She is a young Wet'suwet'en mother of two children under the age of three, Teddy and Mia Maud, who watch her fish from the safety of the sandy patch of shore under the watchful eye of Abigail's mother, Corinne. One of the benefits of fishing is that you do the hard work in the summer months and then can enjoy the salmon with your family year-round. Yet, Abigail still laughs that her children don't really like to touch the fish.
You want to touch the fishy?
Now, I keep talking about fishing like we're all picturing the same thing. But if you haven't seen someone dip net before, it's highly athletic. Abigail chooses one of 26 spots on either side of the canyon wall to perch herself. She ties a rope around her waist, rolls her wrists to position the 8-meter-long pole in front of her, leans toward the water, and sort of does a scooping, dropping motion of the net into the rapids. Timing is the essence here, and she said you know when there's a fish in the net because you feel the slightest jiggle. The water is moving so fast that you cannot see through it, so it's all about the feel, which honestly looks exhausting.
Physically, it feels a bit more challenging because I'm older, and I haven't been exercising, and I'm chasing around 2 kids. So I kind of feel like it's going to be quite hard next few weeks, but I'm pretty excited for it. Yeah. It's like my favorite time of year. Once I got down here and I listened to the natural white noise, and it just brings me back to like when I was a young girl, right? These were some of my best memories were in this canyon, and I absolutely love it. My first dip, I missed like 10 fish. Second one over there, that at the end right there on the other side, that's really, really hard. It's a lot of work unless you learn the current and stuff. But so I missed all of them on that side. But this side's way easier. There's a few times there where I just have to stay connected. My feet need to stay on the ground and you feel it in your whole body. I kind of imagine a magnet attached to all my body. Strapped into the rock, a foot in to keep my feet on the rocks, because they're slippery too, right? And I'm not as strong as I once was.
While dip netting has historically been dominated by men, women like Abigail are rewriting that narrative, not by erasing tradition, but by inhabiting it differently. Their presence on the riverbank complicates binaries of gendered labor and shows that the act of fishing can also be an act of feminist reclamation. This is one part of what anthropologist Clifford Geertz spoke of as a web of significance in this ritual that Abigail is performing in. Here, the web includes ancestral knowledge, colonial restrictions, environmental threats, and gendered traditions, all knotted tightly at the canyon's edge. For millennia, Wet'suwet'en fishers built weirs and used gill nets to catch salmon. But in 1904, when stocks declined from coastal commercial overfishing, the Department of Fisheries restricted Indigenous people to gaffs and dip nets only. It was an erasure disguised as conservation, a pattern Cole Harris called the legal capture of salmon. And yet, Wet'suwet'en people are still here. Mohawk anthropologist Audra Simpson reminds us that refusal is a form of Indigenous presence. Abigail's fishing is not only participation, it's refusal to be erased.
I feel like I'm embodying my healing and connecting to the water and my culture. I feel very powerful when I'm fishing. And growing up, I knew I felt very powerless over many situations. So part of dipping that net in and catching a fish and feeding my family gives me power, gives me a sense of power that I didn't have when I was a little girl. Yeah, it's definitely healing in all sorts of ways. I think because culturally, this is what we're meant to do, right? So there's that connection there that just naturally connects you to the earth and to the water. And it's just like that circle of life where we drink water, we use water, water's necessary for...
That is the sound of a fish flapping in a bag as it is being carried to be counted.
It's like the circle of life, right? Like we drink water, the fish come in water, we're here in the water. And it's just that cycle, and I feel like it's like one of the best cycles ever. So it feels really good to get out and take advantage of my right to fish here and show my children what they are going to be able to do when they're a teenager.
So how are these pieces connected? How does Abigail embody multiple strands, Fisher, mother, Wet'suwet'en woman, cultural knowledge holder, in a single action? She embodies her heritage through a process called territoriality. Historian Tyler McCreary wrote about Wet'suwet'en territoriality as the practices used to maintain ownership and jurisdiction over their lands, a practice built upon generations of knowing and living on the territories, maintaining their distinct identity as Wet'suwet'en people by continuing to tell stories, govern, and being on the land. Every time Abigail dips her net, she is repeating these movements made by her ancestors for the same reason that she is, to feed her family, but with a new tradition assigned to Indigenous peoples in Canada as an act of defiance for her ancestors who were denied this right. Ultimately, this performance of fishing is Abigail's refusal to be silenced or forgotten for herself and the fishers that came before her. But the place remembers too. The rocks here bear grooves from generations of boots. These nets are well worn, and the wooden bridges that connect the granite walls for better access to some of these fishing spots are well worn and carry the memory of past fishers. Fish scales cling to stone like tiny silver archives catching the light. Abigail often brings her children to the canyon. She carries them down from the steep paths, packs their snacks and toys, and sets them safely on the bank with her mother, Corrine. While she fishes, her children watch, their eyes wide. These are not just practical lessons. They're acts of embodied memory. As Stedman, Bannister, and Medway remind us, remembering is not always cognitive. It lives in the muscles, the skin, the breath, and sweat. To dip net at Wet'suwet'en is to enter into what Paul Connerton called an act of transfer. It's not about recovering an authentic past, as Deborah McDowell noted. What we call the past is always a production of the present. Instead, it's about embodying tradition in ways that keep it alive, adaptive, and relevant. Memory is never neutral. It moves through bodies marked by power, gender, and history. Hirsch and Smith remind us that women's bodies have often been assigned the cultural work of mourning and transmission. Abigail's presence here enacts a counter-memory, an act of feminist redress against official forgetting. Her fishing is at once ordinary and revolutionary. Ordinary, because it's been done here for millennia. Revolutionary, because women doing it was once rare, an adaptation born of necessity, resilience, and care. As she hauls a huge sockeye from the river, pulls her net onto the rocks, and bashes its head with the stick, I think of Boehm's distinction between reflective and restorative nostalgia. Abigail is not romanticizing the past. She does not seek to restore a pure tradition untouched by change. In Abigail's fishing, there's a layering of temporalities. As Hirsch and Smith describe in their reading of Novak's Ellis Island portrait, the present is not a single moment, but an encounter between past, present, and future. Abigail's body becomes a vessel of transmission, both descendant and ancestor, mediating memory for generations to come. And yet, this isn't simply about memory as archive. As Corum reminds us, performances are dynamic and emergent. Each fishing season is different. Each movement in this fishy symphony shapes memory anew, inflected by changing river flows, gender roles, and environmental threats. The ritual is both stable and shifting, tethered to the past, yet highly responsive to the present. In this space, old and new constructions of gender collide. The canyon remembers the Wet'suwet'en men who fished here centuries ago, but it also now holds the memories of women's hands gripping the same nets, navigating the same currents. Is Abigail a witness, or is she, as Hirsch and Smith might suggest, an agent of memorial transmission, inscribing memory into her own body so that it might endure? Her practice interrupts dominant histories of disposition and reclaims fishing as a Wet'suwet'en women's right. As Stedman et al. Propose, the body itself becomes a site of memory, an archive of movements, sensations and rituals repeated across generations. The ache in Abigail's arms, the smell of fish scales on her skin, the calluses on her palms, and the dark brown bruise from shouldering the net's handle. These are memory made flesh.
I often dream of fishing, and when I do, it feels so incredible to, because it's so real in my dreams that I feel so connected, which just makes me know how much my body's needing connection to the land and to my culture and for my family. Like, this is the best time of year for me, this and hunting season, just being out on the land. It's always my favorite time is being out on the land, and I definitely just love listening to the sound of the water. And sometimes I'll just drive by and stand up there when it's not fishing season and just listen to the falls. And you can smell, like, this has a specific smell. And the wind coming in through the canyon here is just so perfect. It just brings back so many memories. And it gives me goosebumps just thinking about how many good memories we have here and how many fish we caught and how many more memories I'll make.
Did you?
We like a slime.
On the banks of the Wetzinqua, Abigail's children play in the sand. Back home, they amble around the backyard as Abigail and Corinne fillet 2 coolers worth of salmon. Culture, as Duxbury and Gillette remind us, is not a static artifact. It is alive, moving, held in bodies, in stories, in the things we do with our hands, like dipping a net or pulling a fish from the river, like a mother teaching her daughter to expertly fillet a sockeye and then watching her learn. Fishing, in this sense, is not only a practice, it's a vessel of meaning, a way to know ourselves and a method of return.
It's so much faster, Mom.
Probably. Then are we putting them in this? What are we doing? Which way are
we? We need rinse yours out. Or
rinse it in this. This is for the fillet, eh? I guess we could rinse it in this.
Abby? I'm thinking here too about the Faroe Convention's idea of living heritage. That cultural memory isn't something we protect under glass, but something that we do together. The Faroe Convention teaches us to value heritage in its use, not in its display. This moment, Abigail and Corinne expertly carving their salmon, their hands red with blood, a bucket of fish heads and spines filling quickly as wasps seek out the entrails. This is heritage. It's ceremony. It's pedagogy. It's policy. But what about my part in this? What about settlers? Where do we sit in all of this? I think about what Hirsch and Smith write, that to bear witness to cultural memory, we must tread carefully between empathic identification and appropriation. Our role is not to interpret from above. It is to listen, to hold space, to respect the silence as much as the story, and to commit to infrastructure, justice, to returning stolen land, and amplifying living voices. Abigail didn't have to teach me how to fillet a fish. Her and her mom were doing it much faster than me. But her generosity shines through in an action of having the patience, the language, and the movement to walk me through filleting a sockeye.
You can really put that pressure down. Yeah, that's good. That looks real good. Atta girl. Look at that.
What if memory policy didn't live in government binders, but in the hands of mothers raising their children with tradition? What if sustainability meant celebrating the living and supporting the resurgence of what colonization tried to silence? For millennia, the clans of the Wet'suwet'en have depended on the river and the sustenance it provides, in particular the different species of salmon that traverse this inland channel and its tributaries to spawn through most of the year. Researcher Nancy Tirado writes, Wet'suwet'en women have been leading the defense of the Yinta from the construction of pipeline projects. They and the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs, the highest ranking authorities in their ancestral law and socio-political structure, have consistently argued that they never granted their consent and have called on the authorities and corporate actors to stop the project in the Yinta. Yet CGL continues their construction and has started to drill under the Wet'suwet'en. The Wet'suwet'en is life. It represents the life cycle, not only of the salmon here, but the people who respectfully fish their traditional waters and who share their joy and experience with the witnesses of this tradition. Whenever I've visited Abigail at the canyon, or just stop along the bridge when I'm driving to watch the river, there are always others with me, absorbing the motions that make these memories. Not just for one person, but entire cultures who, against the odds, have survived colonization. The women of the Wet'suwet'en are fighters and will continue to fight as they raise their children, embody tradition, and feed their community. I'd like to think that the river knows this and that she will surge on, a powerful, fearsome, natural beauty where people of all ilk come to bask in her glory. Abigail Joseph has earned her right to fish these waters by both birthright and her tireless dedication to sustaining her culture and keeping Wet'suwet'en memory alive and well for herself and her children. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.